All right, tonight we're going to start a series. There are five parts in it. It's called Hilchos 101, going back to the basics. And tonight we're going to talk about how to do a Shiva visit properly. And the truth is that a number of the things which we're going to hear tonight are probably, they should be common sense, but there's halacha behind it, first and foremost. So we're going to look at some of the halacha, and then we're going to talk some practical suggestions as to how to go about doing a Shiva visit properly. Before we look at the material which I prepared for you, I want to let you know, of course, that the concept of comforting a mourner dates all the way back to two weeks ago's Parsha. Okay, 2 weeks ago's Parsha, at the very end of Parsha's Chayesara, the Torah tells us that Abraham dies. Of course, at the beginning of the Parsha, Sarah dies. But at the end of the parsha, Avram dies, and the pasuk says, "Vayhi acharimos Avraham." And it was after Avram died, "Vayivarch Elohim es Yitzchak b'no," that God blessed Yitzchak his son. "Vayeshev Yitzchak in Be'er Lachayroi," and Yitzchak settled near Be'er Lachayroi, which is a place which is mentioned a number of times in the story of Hagar, and in the story of Ishmael, and in the story of Yitzchak. So that message, that God blessed Yitzchak, is taken by some commentaries, and of course indeed the Talmud, to say that God blessed Abraham, blessed Yitzchak, because the death of Abraham is tied with the blessing of Yitzchak, so it's assumed that God comforted Yitzchak as he was in mourning for the death of his father. And indeed, that's what the Talmud tells us, that that the ways in which, one of the ways, or four of the ways, rather, that we imitate God is through doing the four very important deeds that God does in the Torah. Number one, he clothes the naked. That's what he does to Adam and Chava in the Garden of Eden. Number two, he comforts the mourner, which is over here, in with respect to Yitzchak's Avelus. Number four is burying the dead. That's what he does with Moshe. And number three is evading me at the moment. Okay. The number three is visiting the sick. I'm sorry, that's what he does with Abraham in Parshas Vayera, visiting the sick. So that's what we have to do. Clothe the naked, visit the sick, comfort the mourner, and bury the dead. Those are four deeds that God did. So that's the very beginning. Now there's another episode in the Torah in which the... actually, two more episodes in the Torah in which the idea of somebody dying and therefore being comforted is addressed. The first one is the deaths of the sons of Aaron. So when we look in Parsha Shemini, which is towards the beginning of the book of Vayikra, we have Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's two sons, dying as they're bringing a strange fire in the Mishkan, and we have the immediate aftermath of that, where Moshe says to Aaron, "Hu asher diber Hashem lemor b'krovai ekadesh." This is what Hashem said, that with my holy ones I'll be sanctified, and in the face of the entire nation I will be honored. Vayidom Aharon. And the pasuk says that Aaron was silent. Now there's a whole lot of interpretation as to what it means that Aaron was silent. There's a whole lot of interpretation as to what Aaron's reaction in fact was. You have to remember that when Moshe says what he says, Nadav and Avihu are still laying dead where they had died, and because the next verse tells us that Aaron's cousins go in, Mishael and El Safan, they go in and they take Nadav and Avihu out. But in the Vayidom Aaron, in Aaron's silence, we discern a number of rules of mourning and especially aninus in terms of how a person goes about the post-death, pre-burial behavior from what Aaron and his sons actually do here, for example, in not eating the meat of the korban that they had been instructed to eat. They didn't do that because their brothers / sons had not yet been buried, and that would have been a problem. So we learned some of those things. But in Aaron's silence, we also see that sometimes the reaction of the mourner is one of shock, and in shock there's really nothing to say. Now, is Aaron's silence because of the deaths of his sons? That's a possibility. Is Aaron's silence a reaction to what Moshe said? And that is a fascinating question, Because what Moshe says, you know, I mean, maybe Moshe is trying to comfort Aaron. He's saying, you know, your sons are the holiest of people. God said, Berkovaya Kadesh, and my holy ones, I'm going to be sanctified. And Aaron is quiet. Instead of saying, thank you, Moshe, that's very comforting, he's just, okay, maybe Aaron's saying, you know what, I don't really think there's anything you could say right now that's going to be very comforting to me. I just lost my two sons. Okay, I mean, I came up with a new interpretation this year that I haven't seen anywhere. But that when Moshe says to Aaron, oh, you know, God warned me that this might happen, Bikrovaya Kadesh, Aaron's silence, and all he's thinking is, you didn't tell me? You could have warned me that this kind of thing would have happened. And Moshe was saying, well, I thought it was going to be me and you. That's what the Midrash says. I thought it was going to be me and you, but it turns out it's your sons. They're even holier. So, I mean, I don't know how comforting that is to Aaron to hear, oh, your sons are really holy, and that's why they died. I don't know. I can't speak for Aaron. But there is this idea that maybe the right thing to say is not clear. Maybe the right thing to say is to say nothing. Okay, that's a thought. And finally, the last episode in the Torah that I want to draw to your attention is the death of Miriam. Miriam dies in Parshas Chukas, the beginning of chapter 20 in the book of Bamidbar, the notorious chapter 20. The reason why it's notorious is because in it you have the quote-unquote sin of Moshe. The sin of Moshe, of course, is what according to many view this as the time in which Moshe is doomed to die in the wilderness, and Aaron as well, and that they're not going to go into the promised land. I gave a 4-part series on that this summer, so I'm not going to rehash that, but I don't agree with that view. But in any case, the chapter begins with the death of Miriam. And it tells us, that they came to the Tzin wilderness, and they settled in Kadesh. Miriam dies there, and she's buried there. Okay. Next pasuk. There was no water for the nation. And they gathered against Moshe and Aaron. And they fought with Moshe, and they said, oh, if only we had died with the way our brethren died, and this way we wouldn't be in this terrible place with no water and the food that we're sick of, and we remember the way things were. We don't have any fruits and vegetables the way that we had it in Egypt, etc. So some of the commentaries point out, you know what the problem with this story is? That Miriam dies, and at a time when Moshe and Aaron are supposed to be sitting Shiva, and at a time when Moshe and Aaron are supposed to be comforted over the loss of their sister, what happens is this terrible story, that the people complain to Moshe over their lack of water and over their lack of the foods that they want, and it's a total missing of a perspective here, and that all the things which go downhill from here are because they missed the point. The point is, when Moshe and Aaron lose their sister and they need to be sitting Shiva, you, the nation, need to be giving comfort to your leaders. Just because you have a problem, okay, shelve your problem. Table it for a few minutes, for a few days. Let us mourn properly for Miriam. And I like to think, because at the end of this chapter, Aaron dies. And what do we find? That the people, the Kol Beis Yisrael, everybody mourns for Aaron for 30 days. Which tends to suggest that maybe they got the lesson, especially after they saw what happened with the whole water and the rock episode. And they realize, wait a second, what did we do here? We unleashed a terrible firestorm of what happens to Moshe and Aaron, and we lose our leaders because we didn't give them a chance to mourn properly and we didn't comfort them properly. Okay, so it's important to recognize that these little hints in the Torah are showing us not just the importance of visiting a mourner when they're in the time of Shiva, but to do it right. To do it right. If God visits Yitzchak and gives him a blessing, that means that the way that God comforted Yitzchak, whatever that means, was something which was a blessing to Yitzchak. If Aaron's response to Moshe was silence, maybe Aaron was suggesting, I don't really want to talk right now. And if the response to what happens with Moshe and Aaron was because the people totally missed the boat in terms of the way they responded to Miriam's death, well, we don't want that to happen either. Okay, so with that background in mind, let's take a look at the material that I put together for you. And the sources that I gave you in both Hebrew and English are from two places. One is the Chachmas Adam. The Chachmas Adam borrows very heavily from the Shulchan Aruch. Chachmas Adam was written by Rabbi Avram Danzig of Vilna. That's what Adam stands for here, even though Adam, as we all know, also means a person. But Adam stands for, it's the initials of his name, Avram Danzig mi Vilna, lived in the 19th century. And he put together his own, modified, but a smaller version of it's not an equivalent of the Shulchan Aruch, but he borrows heavily from it in giving a halachic guide to the people of his time and his general vicinity. And that's, and he's most famous for the Chai Adam and the Chachmas Adam, and he's written other books as well. He wrote other books as well. He was actually a businessman, and known for that. But he obviously in some times, or I guess in examples such as him, some businessmen were tremendous Talmidei Chacham as well. Thank God we have such people like that today as well. I don't know how much they're composing works that are going to have such wide range in terms of their influence, but nevertheless. The Chachmas Adam deals with a number of topics, and one of them is Hilchos Avelus, the laws of mourning. And this first source on the page, which he borrows from Simon Shinayin Vav Sif Aleph, as it says in the parentheses at the end of the paragraph, reads the following. The comforters, right, the menachemim, may not open the conversation until the mourner has spoken first. The mourner sits in front. Once the mourner shakes his head, indicating he's excusing the comforters, they're not allowed to sit near him anymore. The mourner or sick person are not obligated to stand for anyone, even the nasi. Now, the sick person is not our topic for tonight, but there are a couple of things which are very instructive over here. The first one is that the people who come in to give comfort to the mourner are not supposed to open up the conversation. Okay, it's supposed to be that if the mourner does not want to say anything, and as uncomfortable as that may be for some people, because you know, silence is sometimes deafening, and the deafening silence is just a source of discomfort for people. So be it. I remember years ago, when I was, and I'm sure we all have stories, some maybe from their own experience, and some from just visiting people. But I remember years ago, I went to a Shiva house, where a guy I knew, he's probably 3 years older than I am, 3 or 4 years older than I am. So he had just gotten engaged, and a week or two afterwards, his mother passed away. Okay, so it was you know, he's a young fellow, and obviously a sad story when somebody that young, because his mother of course was considerably young at that time, and I remember going into the Shiva house, and there was 15 guys, you know, buddies of his, all sitting around the room, and you know what the conversation was? It was quiet. Nobody was saying anything. It was amazing. He had nothing to say. He just, you know, total shock. And these guys all knew the halacha, and so they weren't saying anything. I happened to go with my father, and he thanked my father for coming, which meant that he opened the conversation. And then my father asked him a bunch of questions about his mother. Tell me about your mother. Where did she grow up? And he spoke about his mother, which is what really should take place. As a matter of fact, I didn't give you this source, but one of the points which is mentioned in these sources in the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch HaShulchan and the Chachmas Adam rather. Is that the neshama of the deceased, especially if we're in the house where the person passed away, or even where the person lived? In other words, we have an accepted tradition that the neshama is there until it's in a kind of, I don't want to say turmoil, but it's in a kind of middle limbo. I don't know, let's say limbo, but okay, it's in a middle place. Right, because it needs to get the freedom to leave from what takes place properly in the Shiva home. And I remember walking out of that Shiva home, and I was probably 18 or 19 at the time, and I said to my father, "Wow, how did you do that?" He said, "Years of experience." Okay, well, he can say that, he's a shul rabbi, but the truth is that is something which is very important. And I don't know, I after having. Actually, not that, because some of my grandparents, you know, passed away before that time. But I remember when the first of my grandparents passed away, I remember saying to my mother, because it was her father who passed away, I said, I had just come from a neighbor who was sitting Shiva. And I remember walking into the Shiva house, and I knew the deceased, and a neighbor, you know, it was an older gentleman, you know, the way it should be. And when I walked in, the person sitting Shiva started asking me a whole bunch of questions about me. And how you doing? How's school? I said, well, Like, this is not about me. You know, your father passed away. I didn't say that, but I answered as politely and as curtly as I could. But I remember being bothered by it. So I told my mother, I said, listen, this is a kind of Shiva that it just irks me, because you know, we have to know what the Shiva's about. The Shiva really should be talking about the person who passed away. And so I don't know what my mother's plans had been. She hadn't sat Shiva before for her parent. And what she started doing was she started telling stories about her father. And she was basically on a it was like a record, right? She would tell three stories, then give an indication, and everybody who came in got up and left. Then she'd tell three more stories to the next crowd, and then they got up and left. And then she went back on repeat and did the same thing, because people got up when she told whatever, and then went on. So I don't know how many stories she kept on telling over and over again, but that's what the Shiva was, just telling stories about her father. That was it. And some people, I remember, even remarked, both to her, and I heard it also, that this was a very refreshing kind of Shiva, because it's just important to see it being done in a way which is comforting to the mourner. Now, that's not to say that some people don't get a benefit out of being distracted in that way, and they want to talk about things. But when the person who's coming in to do the visit comes in and starts saying, "Oh, you know, I saw there's a sale in Publix this week, and I've seen that." I turned to, are you serious? You're talking about the coupon you found in the circular? I mean, seriously, at a Shiva house?
Somebody went in there and he says, are you giving up the apartment?
Okay, we're going to get there. Okay, we're going to get there. Okay? All right. So the next one, take a look at the next source. Take a look at the next source. This is Yoredeya in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Shin Ayin Vav. And for the next three sources, the translation is from Sepharia, which is a website which translates a lot of classic sources from our canon of Judaic and rabbinic sources of Torah and rabbinic sources. Okay, so he says, so to one who comes to show honor to his friend, who's an elderly or distinguished person, and to rise at his presence, the latter should say, "Be seated," unless he is a mourner or a sick person. So in other words, the person who comes in, when the mourner says, "Oh, I want to stand for you," no, sit down. We just saw, remember the last line in the previous source? It says the mourner is not obligated to stand for anyone, even the Nasi. A Nasi is like the leader of the community. I mean, it could also mean a prince, but that's what depending on the time and place in which you live, that's what a Nasi is. So he's not required to do so. For such a statement apply, be seated in your mourning or be seated in your illness. Now, in other words, the idea of saying to the person, "Be seated in your mourning," or "Be seated in your illness," if we're talking about a sick person, is something which is you don't want to say it that way, because I don't want to say it's insulting, but it's a reminder for the person in a negative way. Now, what's the person supposed to be feeling during this time? So halacha has guidelines, but in the end of the day, everybody mourns differently, and so that's important to bear in mind as well. Gloss, that's the comment of the Rama, says, "A man should not say, 'I was not punished in accordance with my evil deeds,' or anything similar to these words. For a man should never utter anything in such a way as to give sudden opening." Okay, so in other words, a person might end up blaming themselves for the death of the loved one, and they might say, "Oh, you know, it's because of chata'ai, my sins caused this to happen." She says, don't do that. Don't do that, because you're giving the satan an opening to say, oh, you think that you deserve this. Okay, well, we'll make things even worse for you. This has nothing to do with you, and it's important to remember that. Somebody actually in our shul, who tragically lost an adult child a few years ago, told me that one of the most comforting things that somebody said to him at the Shiva, and we're going to get into why this kind of thing is actually helpful versus what somebody else might do. Another person who had also buried an adult child said to him, "I'm not going to tell you anything about how you should feel, but one thing I will tell you is it's not your fault." Okay, and he says that was very comforting for him, because the first thing that a parent who goes through that kind of experience feels is, it's a punishment to me. Okay, it's my fault, guilty. I mean, look at Aaron. What does Aaron think? I mean, some of the rabbis pin the death of Aaron's sons on him. They even say that it was Aaron's fault because of his involvement in the golden calf, which is a crazy, you know, a crazy assertion. I mean, there are other opinions as well. But that idea, I mean, who can live with that kind of guilt? And so this fellow said that comment from that other person was very helpful. We don't want to open up that kind of door for the evil angel, the Satan, to be able to invite him to inflict more punishment, as the comment in parentheses says. Neither should a man say to a mourner, okay, again, this is in the Shulchan Aruch, what could you have done? It's impossible to change God's verdict. Right? Ah! People are supposed to die anyway. I was at a funeral almost 2 years ago. No, a year and a half ago. A younger person. And the rabbi got up there and said, nobody lives forever. I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, that's what you... this is at the funeral! That is not comforting to anybody, and that is not the right thing to say. You know, what we say is, there's a tragedy here. That's what you say. But you don't say this kind of thing. Okay, but that's a different thing. You know, when you are in an army and you're all going out to battle and you want to say that to keep, you know, to get a laugh out of everybody because you know what the possibility is, that's a totally different story than when somebody, you know, has the tragic circumstance. Okay, fair enough. Okay, this is regarded as blasphemy since it implies that were it possible to change the verdict, the person would have done so. Right? If you believe that death is in God's hands, then don't start saying, oh, if only I had, then maybe I wouldn't, you know. Yeah, I mean, and that goes for any type of circumstance. Oh, you made this, oh, if only you had made such a different medical decision. If only you had gone to a different doctor. What are you trying to do when a person says that? You're trying to make the people are mourning over the loss of so-and-so, who they did, they moved whatever mountains that they could to save the person's life and to do whatever they could to extend the person's life. And then, oh, you know, if you had only called me, I would have told you which doctor to use. I mean, the Shulchan Aruch is saying, you can't do that. That's a terrible thing to say. One should accept God's decree out of love. Okay, that's what it has to be. In the end of the day, if you believe in God and you say this is God's decree, and we don't try to hem and haw and try to figure out how or why this happened. Okay, another comment in the Shulchan Aruch. This is a different siman. This is din she'el shalom ba'avel. Okay, in other words, in what way? This is for the mourner, actually, as well. And it goes back and forth in terms of what our responsibilities are supposed to be. In what manner is a mourner forbidden to extend a greeting of peace? So this is the mourner. So if somebody comes into a shiva house, is the mourner supposed to say, ah, shalom aleichem, thanks for coming, nice to see you? She says, no. During the first 3 days, which are designated for weeping, he does not extend a greeting of peace to anyone. And by the way, that's an important reminder, that the first 3 days are considered to be really, really, really personal. And so, if possible, to avoid it, unless a person is really, really close to the mourner, or obviously if a person's travel schedule doesn't allow for a different situation, one should try not to go unless they're, again, close to the mourner, whether a relative or a really dear friend, because the person who's closer, that their presence would be much more meaningful during that first 3 days versus the presence of somebody who is not as close to the mourner. So that's a sensitivity in order, because remember, it's a designated time for weeping. And the mourner is not supposed to extend a greeting of peace to anyone. In other words, greeting of peace meaning like, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? If others were unaware that he is a mourner and extended them a greeting of peace, he should not respond to them, but should inform them that he is a mourner. So even if people come along into the shiva house, obviously people who come to the shiva house know who is a mourner, usually, but sometimes they don't know. I mean, there are hints if somebody's on a lower chair, although sometimes people are not on a lower chair if it's hard for them to sit on a lower chair. So some people come into the house and they might ask, I mean, I've been in this situation where I don't know the people who are mourning, I knew the deceased, I come in, who's who? So you have to ask, who's who? Okay, you go over to somebody, so it's probably best not to say Shalom Aleichem to people in general. If you go over to the Avil, to the mourner, and say Shalom Aleichem, the person should say, I'm in Avelus, so forgive me for not properly responding. After 3 and 7 days, he does not extend a greeting of peace. In other words, the mourner should not be saying Shalom Aleichem to the person. If others were unaware that he is a mourner and extended them a greeting of peace, then he can respond to them. So after those first 3 days, if somebody says to the mourner, Shalom Aleichem, then the mourner can say back, Aleichem Shalom. After 7 and 30 days, he extends a greeting of peace to others who abide in peace, but others do not extend him a greeting of peace. This, of course, applies to those who are aware that he is within the 30 days. So some of this is determined based on people being aware and cognizant of the particular situation. Okay, and so much the more that he responds to the one who extended him a greeting of peace to the one who is unaware that he is in mourning. These comments that are in parentheses and italics are the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, which Sepharia, when I copied and pasted, inserted in there, which it wasn't there originally, so it's kind of cool the way that it does that. Anyway, after 30 days he is regarded as all other people, and this applies only in the case of other near of kin, but one who is in mourning for his father or mother extends a greeting of peace to others after the 7 days, but others do not extend a greeting of peace to him until after 12 months. And that's an interesting thing to bear in mind, that if we are aware that a person is in mourning, then to say to a person, Shalom Aleichem, while they are actually in practical mourning, because that's what a person is after the death of a parent, so it's a little presumptuous to say to a person in that situation, Shalom Aleichem, because the fact is that they're in turmoil over the loss of a parent in the first year, in that year of mourning.
So can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday night...
Shabbos is different. We're going to get there.
Okay.
We're going to get there. Gloss. And since he is forbidden to extend a greeting of peace, so much the more is he forbidden to indulge in much conversation. However, if he does so out of deference to the public, in other words, if many people come to offer him consolation, he is permitted to say to them, go to your homes with peace. So that's during Shiva. For out of deference to the public, it is permissible. So in other words, it's important to also recognize what kind of society you're in. Okay, in other words, if people come over and people, part of the way people just relate to one another is to engage in conversation. So even if you see somebody saying Kaddish and Shul, you know the person might be in their year of mourning. So maybe not everybody is so keenly aware and cognizant of this. He's not saying don't talk to the person. He's saying don't have too much conversation. And also don't say those words, Shalom Aleichem. And Shabbos is a different story because that's a presumptuous comment. There are some who adopt a lenient view nowadays with respect to extending a greeting of peace to the mourner after 30 days who is in mourning for a parent. And actually they have no grounds for this procedure. The Shulchan Aruch says you don't really have a leg to stand on. Unless it's possible that they make a distinction in this matter by saying that our custom today of extending to the greeting of the mourner is not regarded on the same footing as a greeting of peace extended in their former days. Okay, so that would be a reflection of in what time and place do you live in, society and the way the social give and take plays itself out may have an impact in determining and discerning these little distinctions. Finally, in a locality where it is the adopted custom to extend to mourners a greeting of peace on Shabbos, one may do so. So in other words, to say, Good Shabbos, Shabbat Shalom, that is allowed. And that is appropriate. Why? Because, the commentary, which is in italics, we're on the in this middle box over here, okay, on this page. It says, in the Yerushalmi and Brachos, and in the Yerushalmi Moed Katan, it tells a story that Rabbi Hoshaya the Elder once went to a certain place and met mourners on Shabbos. He extended them a greeting of peace and said to them, I don't know what the custom of your place is with respect to greeting people on Shabbos. However, peace be unto you in accordance with the custom of our place. So he's saying that to say Shalom Aleichem and Good Shabbos to somebody on Shabbos in where Rabbi Hoshaya came from was appropriate and that was proper. So he, not knowing what the place where he found himself, what their custom was. So he said, look, I'm following my practice because where we are is appropriate, but if it's not appropriate here, I basically apologize. Furthermore, the Rambam writes that the mourner may offer a reading of peace to everyone on Shabbos. So even the mourner is allowed to say, Shalom Aleichem, and Good Shabbos. The next part, which goes beyond Shiva, is a question of it's forbidden to send or bring gifts to one who is in mourning for his father or mother throughout the 12 months, and even on the Shabbos. In a locality where it's the adapted custom not to extend him a greeting of peace on Shabbos, but in a locality where it is the adapted custom to extend him a greeting of peace on Shabbos, then it would be permissible. Okay, so we get a sense of a few different aspects of the halacha and where what things we can or should say or should not say come to us from here. Okay, one more source from the Shulchan Aruch, and that's the next little box. A mourner is forbidden to have joy. Therefore, he should not hug a baby all the week of Shiva, lest he come to play with the child. Now that's, I don't know how many people are careful about that. I mean, some people probably may find it comforting to hold the baby. So again, I would imagine that is something which might have a different view depending on what, maybe the age of the child or the people in question. But the point that the Shulchan Aruch is telling us is that a person would want to realize and recognize what Shiva is all about. Shiva is a time to mourn. And not, would it be proper, for example, for the person to watch a sitcom during Shiva? I mean, I think that the answer is no. It might be distracting, but I don't think that that's appropriate. Maybe today's sitcoms are really not funny. But maybe people like stand-up comedy, I like stand-up comedy, would that be appropriate to listen to during Shiva? I think that the answer would be no. Because to purposely seek out opportunities to laugh and to have joy during Shiva, it's the wrong time and place for those activities. Okay, the last two halachas that I want to share with you are on the bottom, and this is in honor of my mother, okay, who gets a certain amount of joy out of cleaning. Okay, and the question is, are you allowed to get joy from cleaning if the house gets clean during Shiva? And he says, nah, the Chochmas Adam says we can do cleaning and straightening out in the house of mourning because this is not considered to be joyous. Ah, what if people do get joy out of having a clean house? That's not real simcha, okay? It might feel good, but that is not real simcha. We can clean the dishes as well. Now, we don't bring besamim and mugmar. These are things which have a very nice smell. Which bring joy, unless the deceased is there. But of course, the deceased being there is not during Shiva. Shiva does not begin until the deceased is gone. And in that case, it's not considered to bring joy. It's considered to offset the whatever smell the body might bring. So that's a different thing. But that's not for Simcha, and that's not during Shiva anyway. So that's not our topic. We don't tell rumors and stories in the house, for they bring joy. Rather, we sit quietly. Now, I'm not sure what kind of rumors and stories. I mean, agada. So agada might be stories like from the Talmud. Shmua is news. So maybe that's what it means. I just translated the word shmua and agada literally, but it might be referring to other things. And the main thing is that reading books or reading things in the newspaper, they might bring joy to people, and we want to try to limit that. Rather, we sit quietly. Okay, now sitting quietly, of course, is in lieu of telling those shmuos and agados, whether it's news or whether it's stories, etc. But the conversation surrounding the person who has passed away are certainly appropriate, and as we're going to get to in a moment. And finally, we should not have too many people eating with the mourner. They should split up in the house so it doesn't look like a celebratory meal of joy. So family members eating together is one thing, and another thing is to eat with the mourner. And that, of course, plays into an interesting distinction in custom between the Ashkenazi community and the Sephardic community. The Ashkenazi community does not really have the practice to to feed people who are coming into the house. The Sephardic community does, but the Sephardic community has a very different tradition about, in general, when people come into their house, to have them make a bracha in my house. We have to make a bracha. So that happens both in a not in a time of mourning and also during a time of mourning. And so while I certainly try to be very careful not to eat something in an Ashkenazic house, it's an insult to the mourners if you don't make a bracha in their house if it's a Sephardic home. So that's the exception that I've made personally, owing to that distinction in custom. Okay, the next couple of things which we have here. So the first there's an article here called "How to Pay a Shiva Call," written by Rabbi Elchanan Zon, who's the head of the National Association of Chevra Kedisha. Our shul, when we send out the a death notice, Baruch Dayan HaMS, there we have a link to this article, which concludes with the top of the next page. I'm not going to read the whole article, but Rabbi Zon makes a lot of important reminders about how long a Shiva visit should be, and to be careful to speak more about the deceased than to speak about topics which are irrelevant. But on the top of the next page, you'll see he has here a list of 12 do's and don'ts of Nicham Avelim. And I'd like to go through them with you. So this is one of the links which we provide in the shul. And the other link which we provide is the article on the next page, which is a practical guide to paying a shiva visit from the Orthodox Union, written by Rabbi Jacob Abramowitz. And we're going to look at that momentarily as well. Okay? So Rabbi Zon's do's and don'ts, page 12. Turn off your cell phone. Prepare for the visit by thinking about memories of the deceased. Now, of course, you can only do that if you knew the deceased, right? Sometimes we go to Shiva. Everybody goes to Shiva for different reasons. Sometimes we go because we knew the deceased. Sometimes we go because we know the mourner. And sometimes we go for the wrong reasons. Okay, maybe their guilt, maybe their something else. I remember one time I had a college friend who passed away at age 25. I think he had like an aneurysm of some kind. I remember going to the Shiva because I knew him. I did not know his parents. And when I walked into the house, there was another couple there who had similarly lost a son. And they were telling my friend's parents about all the things that they're going to be feeling and going through. Okay? Your life's never going to be the same. This is what you're going to be feeling. And I was very young at the time, whatever, it was 24, 25. And I kept a lot in me at the time, but all I wanted was for these people to leave because they were saying all the wrong things. And clearly they weren't there to comfort my friend's parents. They were there for themselves so that they could unload. And that is not a good reason to go. Now, I imagine that they knew my friend's parents. I don't know. But the next conversation they had was a very different conversation. Okay. Okay. Anyway, so that's important to think about memories of the deceased. And if not, just, Okay, be mindful of different avelim at the same shiva with different needs. So, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, some people go because they know one of the mourners, and then maybe they go to the other mourners, maybe they don't. But remember that going to different mourners who don't know us, right? It's one thing that, for example, it's somebody from our shul, but you don't know their sibling, okay? You don't know who, so if they're sitting shiva for the loss of a parent or the loss of a sibling, whatever they're sitting shiva for, and there are other people who are sitting shiva as well, So I don't think it's inappropriate to say, I know your brother, I know your sister from Anshei Chesed, and want to wish you comfort over the loss of your mother, father, whatever. And I think that's fine. And if they ask you your name, it's okay to say the name. But if you don't know them, if they're all sitting together, it's a little easier. But sometimes they're in different parts of the house, so then it's a little different. But to keep it to a minimum and to recognize a sign that says, it's time to go. Let them cry and express pain openly. There's no need to distract them. Be comfortable with quiet. Sometimes it's what is needed most. And as I shared with that with the story that I told earlier. And listen with empathy, even to feelings of guilt, if expressed. And we get that a lot too, right? Sometimes people didn't have the best relationship with the person who has passed, or they feel like they didn't do enough, or they weren't there, or whatever it may be. And if people want to express that, then what Rabbi Zohn is saying is, don't say to the person, don't feel that way. If a person feels that way, you don't lay it on. Oh, you feel guilty? You should feel guilty. Don't do that either. But I hear you. I'm listening to the things which you're saying. And the main point, I think, to empathize with is the concept of imchem anochi b'tzara, that I'm with you in your pain. Okay, I'm here to offer either a physical hug or a non-literal hug. And that's why I'm here, just to listen and to let you know that people are thinking about you. Okay, don't. And this, Mark, gets to what you were saying at the outset. Don't ask questions to satisfy your curiosity. Oh, how did so-and-so die? Oh, how long were they in the hospital? Oh, were they sick? If they want to say, a lot of people will tell the story of how their mother, their father passed away, what the last 3 months were like. I mean, that happens all the time. But let them offer that information without being prompted. That is, for some people, it's comforting to do so. To say, we worked really hard, we tried, the aides were amazing, the help, the nursing staff, the doctors, da da da. Let them say that on their own. But to satisfy your curiosity, Rabbi Zohn says, not a good idea. Do not tell your own personal stories of grief, like the example that I shared with you of that couple with their son. Tragic, not taking it away. But you see the difference between that couple and what they told my friend's parents and the other fellow who I told you about to the member of our shul who said, "Don't feel guilty, right? It's not your fault." Okay, so knowing the right thing to say versus knowing the wrong thing to say is a skill set that we should try to hone. Don't have side conversations with others who are visiting. So it's an interesting one. I actually had that recently. It was just at a Shiva house where the mourner introduced me to somebody else and told them who I was. So the person said, as the person started having a conversation. Now, I would not have had the conversation, but the person started asking me because the mourner said, "Oh, you know who this is?" So that, I'd like to try to avoid that, but certainly not to engage in those conversations. If you need to, have a conversation when you step outside. You're both going to leave soon, so then that's a good idea to wait. Don't minimize or discount pain. It's the wrong time for "be strong" or "I know how you're feeling" or "you shouldn't feel that way." Better, "I feel your pain." Oh, see, Baruch Shekivanti to Rabbi Zon. Right? That's "I feel your pain" is Imachem Anochi B'tzara. I am suffering with you. I have a dear friend whose sister died at the age of 18, and I remember it was a terrible tragedy. I remember I only went to visit the Shiva the day after the burial because we were going out of town for Yontif. It was right before Pesach, I remember. And when I got there, I remember there was another fellow there who I knew who was saying to my friend, "Your sister's in a better place." And I remember wanting to really tell this guy to be quiet because you don't know what you're saying. You can't what?
You can't throw him out.
I can't throw him out. So I waited for him to leave, and I told my friend, I said, because my friend would say, "Look, if I didn't believe in God, I'd be jumping off the roof right now," which is something that we saw before. The Shulchan Aruch said, "I want you to accept God's decree out of love." Okay, and I said to him, "Look, when people say so and so is in a better place, that's what they say when somebody's had Alzheimer's for 10 years, 15 years, whatever, dementia, terrible kinds of physical conditions." He said, "Your sister was in the prime of life, and this is a terrible tragedy, and we're just here crying with you." And I said, what that other guy said, he's repeating what he's heard at other Shiva houses. I don't know if I said the right thing. I hope I did. But it's the idea of Imachem Anochi B'Tzara, that we are in pain with you. Don't, Rabbi Zon says, initiate discussions about cause of death or medical history of the deceased. Okay, so I mentioned that before. And if the person wants to offer it, that's their choice, but we don't have to ask those kinds of questions. Don't say anything if you're unsure if it's appropriate or you don't know what to say. When in doubt, do without. Okay, so those are good suggestions. If you look in the right column, this is an article which I found on Aish.com, Practical Guide to Paying a Shiva Call by Mrs. Lori Palatnik, who's a very famous Kirov worker. And in the middle, you see the bullet points. She says, here are a few things not to say. Okay, good reminders. And you're more than welcome to take these pamphlets home. How are you? You know what the answer to that one is? You don't really want to know, okay? I know how you feel, and the answer is no, you don't. At least the person lived a long life. That is not helpful at all. It's good that you have other children, right? If they lost, if they buried a child, at least you have other children. Take comfort in your other children. That's why we say, may God comfort you, because the people who bury a child probably, in many cases, at least while they're in Shiva, would just like to follow their child. Don't worry, you'll have more. Oh, that's a great one. That's a good one. People lost a baby, and you'll make up another one. No matter what age, that is a devastating thing. And so we don't want to say those kinds of things to people. When people have buried a child, baby, any age, our job is to show up and cry. That's our job. Cheer up, in a few months you'll meet someone new if they lost a spouse. Oh yeah, that's a good one. Let's talk about happy things. Okay, Laura Palatnik, excellent. You are correct. Dead on. Turn the page. Rabbi Jack Abramowitz also has a list of things to avoid, and they are noted at the bullet points. I don't have to read into them. Mark, the one you had talked about is the last bullet point there. Inquiries about purchasing the deceased's possessions or real estate. So, you're selling the apartment? So, is the house up for sale? You ready? Okay. That is not. Let's just say it's the wrong time. It's the wrong time for this.
I understand that in New York, rent control apartments
Yeah. I understand. I understand.
But I mean, how?
Okay. Turn the page. With this, I want to conclude. And again, this Orthodox Union Practical Guide, Rabbi Abramowitz article is one of the links which we send on the bottom of a death notice, Baruch Dayana MS notice that we send out. But I really thought that this was very to the point. The comment that he shares, the postscript which he shares from Rabbi Bender of Darchei Torah, Yeshiva Darchei Torah in Far Rockaway, where Rabbi Bender gives the following advice. When paying a shiva call, you are going there to help ameliorate the family's pain. It is not important how a person passed away. Some of these are repetitive to things which we saw before. It's not important how a person passed away. It's also not important how old they were, how sick they were, how long they were ill, and whether they suffered. These are the kinds of things, if the person wants to share, they will. But if they don't want to share, bringing them up is just, it's just pain. It's just pain. They're already feeling pain. They don't need us to ask questions that will make them feel more pain. What is important is whatever is important to the family. What is important also, Chazal tell us, is to speak about the achievements of the Niftar or the Niftaris. I have no problem saying to an Avel, tell me about your mother or tell me about your father. In fact, those are the best things that the comforter can say, because that is what opens the door to the kind of conversation that should take place in a Shiva house. Tell me about the deceased. And it's easier, of course, if it's an elderly person that has passed away, because that's the cycle of life in the proper order. Right? It's a little harder to say, tell me about your baby. And that's why I say when a baby has died, our job is to come in and cry with the people and then leave. Okay, we love you, we care about you. That's really it. If you're not sure about something, about saying something, don't say it. We saw that before. Try to bring the level of conversation to a higher plane. If somebody does bring up the sale at Publix, change the topic, please. Chazal tell us that the Avel should open the conversation, but sometimes they're in too much pain to speak. And that means if you react by just sitting quietly, it can be best, even though the quiet can be deafening. And that is true. Don't open the conversation. When you feel you must speak, say something nice about the Niftar if you can. Sometimes the Avel might say, did you know my parent? And if the answer to that question is yes, so then that's a good opening to say, ah, I loved your dad, I loved your mom, he, she was amazing. Here's a story. What? Right, I remember, you know, a time when I saw or had an experience or an encounter or a conversation, right? In other words, uplifting about that. I remember I had my grandmother and a cousin living in Israel, and I remember when his brother was like a rabbi somewhere. So he was sitting shiva, I believe, for his brother, and he had a tape recorder. Anybody who came in and had a story about him, he hit record. He wanted to get these things down. I knew that he wouldn't remember them, so he could listen to it afterwards. Now that, I think, that's a really cool idea. That's a great idea. So that is something which I imagine would be helpful to some people. Try to focus on their spiritual accomplishments or the history, dynamics, and events of the family. You'll be surprised how easy it is to get into a conversation like that, and stay away from questions that can bring up hurt. Did you guys get along? Ooh, okay. You can figure out pretty quickly if that is the case. Okay. And I, one of the comments that Rabbi Abramowitz says here, by the way, which is, it's the beginning of the last paragraph on the previous page. He says, really, it's just common sense, and he gives examples. I don't have to read it to you; it's all in English. And I think that is a key point to bear in mind. Halacha has a lot to say about what does it mean to go through mourning and to go through the avelos process. And our job as the menachemim, when we are doing a shiva visit, is to only feed into the format that halacha provides. And it's not to distract from it in a way, certainly in a way, that is not appropriate. At worst, if we don't have anything to say about the mourner, just come in, say, Hamakom Yenachem Eschem B'Sochei Avel Tzion Yerushalayim. May God comfort you among the mourners of Tzion and Yerushalayim. Sit around, listen for a little bit, and then leave. The most important thing that we've done is to show up. That gives nechama. Oh, because now, because maybe in an empty shiva house, it's like, oh, nobody really cares. Showing up and not saying anything, you showed up. That means you care. That's it. And that, I think, is the most important thing that we can remember. Our job is to show up, have empathy, feel the pain of the people, and not to try to create distractions, which in the end of the day are not helpful. Hopefully our Shiva visits should be helpful, so people should feel love, warmth, and memories that they'll cherish, hopefully, of the deceased, especially if we knew them. And if we didn't know them, at least they feel that we showed up because we care.
Are you allowed to...